Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries, published by Henry Press, and the host of the Cozy Corner podcast, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Ellen Byron, who also writes as Maria DiRico, joins me today in the Cozy Corner to chat about the fifth novel in her award-winning Cajun Country Mystery series, Fatal Cajun Festival. Welcome, Ellen.
Hi, so thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
I'm glad to have you. So to start, for those of us whose knowledge of Louisiana begins and ends with Mardi Gras in New Orleans and who can't tell a Creole from a Cajun, can you tell us a little bit about Cajun Country?
Yes, Cajun Country is basically north and it starts about an hour north and to the west of New Orleans. The area which I write about is kind of quasi, it's Cajun country, but it's also plantation country because it's where along the River Road where there are plantations built in, you know, from the late 1700s through the mid 1800s. But many Cajun people live there. And they're actually, what people don't know is there's prairie and coastal Cajun. And by the coast, south of I-10, you know, in the area like New Iberia and Houma and even Lafayette is, which I guess kind of straddles both worlds, is considered coastal Cajun. You know, the food is more seafood oriented. And then towards I-10 and really north of I-10 along that is what they call prairie Cajun. And those are towns that are more branch-based and less about seafood going shrimping and oystering and stuff, and more about, you know, cattle, raising cattle, and the cuisine actually in both areas kind of reflects that. And and Creole is more about the literal definition is first born in this country. It's a little confusing, but it's basically anyone with a European or ancestry and of some kind, and also African. There's African Creole too, with African ancestry, and so the Cajuns came over in the Le Grand Regiment, which is about 1766-65, where the English kicked the French out of Acadia, and which was a part of Canada, and they migrated down to Louisiana, and so Cajun is actually a kind of a bastardization of the word Acadian. If you say Acadian fast enough and with an accent, it becomes the word Cajun.
So what inspired you to set your series in Cajun country?
I transferred to, in the middle of sophomore year of college, I transferred to Tulane University. I was a huge Tennessee Williams fan, and so to go to school in the city where so much of his work, where he lived and which inspired some of his great work, was like, to me, a dream come true. And I really became fascinated. You know, my parents would come visit and we'd drive around the region. And I just became fascinated by the culture because, when I went to visit in the mid-80s, you can still find people even now speaking Cajun French as their first language. And so for there to be a culture within the culture fascinated me because I realized, because I thought about that, why am I so interested in that? But I think what really hooked me was that you have people who've been in America, you know, a culture that's been here since the 1700, you know, the 1760s, which is older than the nation actually, who still have their own cuisine, their own music, their own language, you know, a culture within a culture. And my mother was born in Italy and she came over when she was a little girl. But growing up, all through my childhood, we had Italian relatives still coming over from Italy. So I grew up really on that side of the family in a culture within a culture. And I think I kind of connected those two because I had lived it in my own way and then just found it fascinating. You know, and in my own way, it was the immigrant experience. But when you look at the Cajun culture, I mean, like I said, their ancestors, the ancestors of the Cajuns now have been here since before our nation was actually a nation. So, and yet have held on to so much of their rich culture and heritage.
And there's a real life place called Pelican, Louisiana, somewhere south of Shreveport and way north of New Orleans. So is this the Pelican, Louisiana that your series is set in? There is. I Googled it.
No, that's hilarious. Oh my gosh, because I Googled it a while ago and thought there's no Pelican, Louisiana. I thought I was making it up. I was like, why is there not a Pelican, Louisiana? So when I wrote the book, I'm telling you, that is hilarious because you're telling, I don't know why it didn't come up because I looked it up on a map. I didn't see it on the map. I had a big map of Louisiana. I've never heard from anyone in Pelican, Louisiana saying, hey, you're writing about our town. No, in my head, it was completely fictional. That's hilarious.
Oh, that is hilarious.
How could I not know that? I looked it up. I did my research and my homework.
Well, it came up as an unincorporated community, but it was there, just kind of right in that Baton Rouge and Shreveport.
Oh, that's so funny. Maybe that's why it didn't appear on the maps that I was looking. So I'm a map. I'm old school that way. I'm MapQuest or Google Maps, everything. But I grew up loving maps. And I would sometimes chart out our family vacation. And in fact, in one of the plays I wrote, there was a character named Rhodes who was very much on the spectrum. But the one thing he could do is tell you how to get anywhere in the country. He had like an encyclopedia knowledge of mapping.
Wow.
So it's funny because all these years I haven't heard from anyone from that area going, hey, thanks for writing about it. And me going, sorry, I didn't. So, and they might not be too fond of my, of the town motto, which is yes, we pelican. So.
I think that's a great motto.
I think it's a fantastic motto. The state does bleed very, very red outside of New Orleans. So that's, but hopefully they do get a kick out of it. So.
Well, maybe if someone in Pelican, Louisiana hears the podcast, they'll start reading your series and then let you know how much they appreciate you sending your book in their unincorporated community.
Oh my gosh. I have to, as soon as we're done, I'm going to go, I'm going to look that up and just, you know. To answer your original question, no, in my head, in my small brain, it's a fictional town. But it was inspired by some real places like St. Martinville and Brobridge and, Opelousas and Natchitoches. You know, they're all, so the last two are not in Cajun country, really. They're, I'd have to look at, it's very amorphous, the quote unquote boundaries, because it's almost like they're created by tourism, the tourism board. So, you know, there are plenty, you know, even north of Baton Rouge, there are plenty of Cajun people living there. But the true Cajun country is kind of like the area between I-10 and the Mississippi west of the Mississippi.
Okay. Now, as mentioned, your fifth Cajun country mystery is titled Fatal Cajun Festival. So did a real festival inspire the book?
The real festival that inspired the book is the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, which happens the last weekend of April and the first of May every year. And it's just one of the great events. I mean, it should be on everyone's bucket list. And it's on a lot of people's bucket list because it's got, since my time, since I started going there, it's got insanely crowded. But it's just an incredible event. And it's, when they say jazz and heritage, they mean it because there is like, in addition to like 10 tents and stages for music, there's this amazing food area where it's like all regional food. And then there's a, you know, craft area. And it's where I discovered years ago, this was the exception then because it was unusual. Now, of course, it's true of everyone. A voodoo priestess who took MasterCard. And, you know, in the 80s, that was like a bit of that's kind of hilarious. And I use that in my series that there's a voodoo priestess who takes MasterCard. So, and I still have some of her greasy bags. So sitting there, you know, hopefully giving me luck. So, and so I decided, okay, so that kind of inspired, okay, well then what if, because there are New Orleans, in Louisiana, there are more festivals in Louisiana than there are days of the year.
Wow.
And which is why even in, you know, even Mardi Gras Murder, which is a series, the book before this, the one that won the Agatha Award, has, you know, like a pageant. So for Mardi Gras. But I thought, well, you know, if you have a small town and you're trying to increase tourism, what if you did a festival that aligned, you know, that kind of bumped up against Jazz Fest like the week before? So, you know, Monday through Thursday, which are the dark, you know, the quiet days in tourism, people could come to your festival and then segue, you know, then just drive on down to New Orleans for Jazz Fest.
And so how much fun is it to do research for your novels with festivals and voodoo priestesses and all that?
Oh, it's the best. Louisiana food. It's the best. I'm so lucky. I have a carte blanche to go to, you know, if I could go to New Orleans and Louisiana all the time, I would. If I could live there, I would. You know, my husband and I are trying to negotiate the fact that he's not a fan of humidity. But, you know, I would just go from one festival. I would be at a festival, I think, every day of the year. I particularly love small town fairs and festivals. And my parents had a cottage in northwestern Connecticut, which has nothing to do with Louisiana. And one of my favorite things to do was go to, like, you know, the festivals and the fairs and, you know, like the county fair or the town fair, and, you know, go to the 4-H tent and, you know, see, I just love that stuff to death. And here, I mean, for the third book, Acacian Christmas Killing, which revolves around the bonfires they build on the levees north of the Mississippi in like Gramercy and Lutcher and Paulina, some of the towns on the Mississippi on either side. I made my family go for spend Christmas in Louisiana so I could be at the bonfires, which are lit Christmas Eve. And so I really felt I needed to write about that. I needed to experience it to write about it. And so what happened that night is it was raining. And so sometimes what happens if it rains, they postpone and do it New Year's Eve, and we weren't going to be there. So I was like in a panic, but the last minute it was like drizzle and they said, we're going to do it. So, you know, I was up there taking pictures and I got like coated. I got wet and then all the ash fell on me. I mean, I was completely coated. And then I had to, you know, we were going to a 9:30 Christmas Eve mass. My friend Gaynell, who's a real person, by the way, she's in my series and she's inspired by a real person. We were going to mass and I had to shower before that. And I wrote all that into the book.
Wow.
I mean, I got to write it all in. So that was like, oh, that was fantastic.
Now, do you come up with the titles for your books after you do the research and come up with the story? Or do you come up with the titles first and then decide which way to go?
I come up with the story first. And then a couple of titles, like Mardi Gras Murder, that was mine. And I think Cajun Christmas Killing. Plantation Shutters was my, which is a great title. That was a friend of mine who's a fellow sitcom writer. She came up with that, God bless her, Mindy Schneider. And then Body on the Bayou was a team effort. That was like my publisher, Matt Martz, helped that and with that one. And then the Fatal Cajun Festival, I think, was mine too, or a combination, but I think it was pretty much mine. But the sixth book is going to be, and that was a team effort because, like, we could not, it involves Halloween, which you think would be like a easy peasy for a title, but you don't want it to be French because that confuses, like, originally it was called Halloween Horror, or, you know, like horror in French, but that confuses people. It's like a typo to people. So we went back and forth, and it's going to be either Murder on, at, or in the Bayou Boneyard. So I'm not sure which of the preposition. I don't know grammar at all. I'm like I've been a professional writer for I can't even tell you how many years. And if you gave me a grammar test, I would utterly fail it.
Well, fortunately, we have editors and grammar police.
Oh, thank God.
You know, speaking of Fatal Cajun Festival, it opens with a list of the cast of characters. So was that your idea or was that your publisher's idea?
No, that started with Mardi Gras Murder, and I wish it had started with a Cajun Christmas Killing, because I have a lot of characters in my book. And I noticed readers were like having little, you know, if you put the book down and come back to it, you have to remind yourself. And this happens to me when I put a book down and come back to it, you know, remind yourself who people are. And some people don't like, they kind of think that's not a great idea to have a, you know, like a cast list. I don't know why. I guess they think it's almost like cheating, like you shouldn't need a cast list, which is I get totally. And I don't know, you know, and I think if, like, and I'll tell you something after this that ties into that, but I've had readers, in fact, in some of the reviews, readers have commented on how valuable that is, you know, that they get can go back and remind themselves who someone is. I've actually had, you know, my editors say, take out a few people. We don't see them enough. Don't put them in there. It's just going to be too crowded in the cast list. But, you know, there's a thing where, you know, if you're writing a series, you tend to accumulate characters. Some characters, and like Sandy Seacrest was a naming that someone won at the Malice Live auction, and I wrote her, I turned a character into, you know, gave her that name. Well, she's now engaged. She's engaged, and she's going to be engaged to one of the other characters. Oh, so she started off. She's now a regular. So, but like in Bayou in the Boneyard, Bayou in the sixth book, whatever the hell it's going to be called. One of the characters is Gaynell Bourgeois, who again, I said, was inspired by a dear friend of mine. You know, you see Fatal Cajun Festival very much revolves around her. Well, in book six, she's off on tour. You know, there was no room for her in the story. So I feel really badly, but I only mention her once, but you know, I can't, you can't write to everyone. So there are a couple of characters, regulars, who were more important previous books, like Leia and her husband Kyle, who basically get a mention in the sixth book because there's just not room for them.
Right.
Unless I gave them their own story, which I did not have. And I don't want to, you know, I don't like to write to the word count. Then I feel like you end up stuffing a book when it doesn't need to be stuffed.
True.
So
I agree with that.
Okay, yeah.
And it's nice that, you know, your regular characters can go on vacation or go on tour and come back in a later book.
Exactly. If there's I don't know if there will be past, I'm praying there's another book past six, but you know, it's this the marketplace now is different. And so hopefully there will be, you know, we'll see. I hope to know in winter or spring. But, you know, meantime, it's good. I think when you're writing a series, I think it is good to take a breath.
Yes.
So,
and speaking of your series, both of your series, your current series, the Cajun Country Mysteries,
your
new series, Catering Hall Mysteries, which you'll write as Maria DeRico, contain recipes. I know there was one you shared on a blog by Kim Davis.
Yes.
The blog is a cinnamon sugar and a little bit of murder, where she made a rum raisin cake.
Yes.
And Catering Hall has Italian mysteries.
It has Italian and it actually has some Greek recipes too, because, and it'll have much, I think, more of a mix of recipes. And believe me, that's the great irony of these books, that I am not a cook.
Oh.
There are people like Leslie Karst who are just, she's trained as a chef. And then there's me. And if you'll notice in Fatal Cajun Festival, I literally, there's for a recipe, it just says RIP sweet potato pralines, because I had one at this great shop on Decatur Street called Southern Candy Makers, and it was a sweet potato praline. It was so good. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's going to be, I'm going to make that, you know, it kind of inspired the whole praline run, praline, I should say, I'm pronouncing it like a Yankee, the praline run in Fatal Cajun Festival. So then I go to make them. It's like, oh, this is going to be so cool. I threw out three batches. I could not get it to work. And so finally I had to write RIP sweet potato pralines and explain to readers, you're not getting a recipe here because I couldn't, you know, but if you want to buy, here's the website for the place where I got the original ones that inspired me. And let me tell you, pralines are so hard to make. I didn't realize that. I was like, no. So I even wrote in to the batch I made, oh, you're going to get three textures. You're going to get, you know, like kind of like hard and soft and chewy. Honestly, if you're a good cook or candy maker, you're not going to get three batches, different textures. But if you me and you're like flailing, you will. So and then my family, it's like I keep trying. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, you know, when I did a jambalaya recipe and I forgot which book that's in, I really like to make the recipes my own. Like, even if I find a recipe, I will tinker so that I feel like I can call it my own. And so I'll do a little something, or I'll add ingredients or take out an ingredient. And so that I put my personal stamp on a recipe, because otherwise I feel like it's kind of cheating if you're just like pulling, you know, I mean, there are rules like you can't copyright like ingredients, but you can copyright the way something is written. So the cheat is to write it differently. But I also, you know, try to play around with the ingredients to the point where my family was like, when I was playing with the jambalaya recipe, they were like, no more jambalaya, stop making it. We can't eat another bowl of jambalaya.
how
I cheated for the gumbo recipe. What? I'm sorry?
Oh, you cheated for the, tell me about the gumbo recipe?
I cheated and said Gaynell, you know, because Gaynell's, my friend Gaynell, I met her in the mid-80s. My friend and I took a drive up the River Road, and we stopped at this kind of half-abandoned plantation called Ashland Belle Helene, because there was like a little like trailer, and there was, you know, almost a hand, I think it was a handwritten sign, tours, and the place seemed so interesting, and it turned out it's where where Clint Eastwood shot the Beguiled movie, and the place was really a wreck, and it was the subject of a lawsuit between family members, because Louisiana still has remnants of the Napoleonic Code, and it's something they called forced inheritance, which I think has been changed since then, where all the descendants had to agree on the property. And there was one holdout, Mr. Hayward, and he didn't want to sell it to Shell, which wanted to buy the property from the family. And so Gaynell was the woman who was running the tour, and she was so delightful that we completely bonded. And I tell her story at the end of Plantation Shutters, where we kind of bonded, we were friends, we lost touch. Then in the 10 years later, and you know, she was older than me, anyway, my husband and I are taking a tour, and we stop at Homa's house, and I just to go to the gift shop, I said, you know, I had a friend who used to work at Ashland Belle Helene. Do you know Gaynell Bourgeois Moore? And they said, no, she works here. And they paged her or something, and she comes running down in her, you know, antebellum costume, and our friendship was rekindled. And she's 100% Cajun, and she's a self-taught musician, self-taught artist, self-taught writer, and she's fantastic at all of them. And I completely forgot how I got on this side trip.
You're what telling me about a gumbo recipe.
Oh, the recipe, okay. So when it came to a gumbo recipe, I thought, I can't spend hours doing this. I don't want to screw it up. I said, Gaynell, give me your recipe. Now, of course, someone like Gaynell, she's like my Zizi Rose on the Italian side, my Aunt Rose, where giving you a recipe is like, well, you take a little of this and a little of this. And so I just, you know, it's not like a quarter teaspoon, half a teaspoon, half a cup. It's like, well, you know, it's like almost like spoken word. So I just transcribed what she told me. And, you know, it's almost like a folk recipe rather than an actual recipe, although I've had people make it and say it's really good. So that was like a lot of talking.
Now, your catering hall mystery series, which, since it's set in a catering hall, I'm going to assume it's going to be very foodie focused. Sounds very different from your Cajun country mysteries.
Yes, and I tell people, and the truth is, you know, when I in the early '80s when I was trying to act, and that went very quickly. I worked as a cater waiter for Martha Stewart, and then one day this book arrived in this mail. This beautiful book called Entertaining, with a little card saying thank you. And I look inside, and there I am. I'm standing next to Martha in a picture on page 29 in the early editions. And so I had a little experience working, you know, as a cater waiter. And then my cousins, my mom's Italian, and some cousins by marriage ran a couple of catering halls in Queens growing up, the Astoria Manor and Grand Bay Marina, which is where Jer and I had our New York wedding reception. And, you know, so it's an urban cozy, and there are very few of those. I would say the other, you know, the only comp I could really come up with was a Cleo Coyle's series, and I'm sure there are others. I just, you know, that was like kind of a cozy comp. But you know, I make Astoria like a little neighborhood, because that's what it is. And as opposed to, you know, the in my head fictional town of Pelican, I mean, it's in Astoria, and the place where my protagonist Mia lives is where my nonna lived, and my Zizi Rose and her family and Uncle Henry lived upstairs with my cousins, and nonna lived downstairs. And, you know, I actually use the real name of the bakery we went to in Astoria, and the location where she works is inspired by the one where we had our second reception. And the And originally, Mia, you know, she comes back from Florida where she's had a bad experience. Her husband, who was cheating on her, disappeared with his mistress. And she's considered a person of interest until the boat washes up with the mistress's body and he's gone and he's assumed, presumed, lost at sea. So she's off the hook. She goes back to New York to help her father run this catering hall. And originally, there was a guy in her life who's family was mobbed up, but he was trying not to be. And my agent had a great idea. He said, well, why don't you make the whole family mobbed up? But she's trying, you know, so I did that. But in this, when her father gets the catering hall as payment for a gambling debt, but he has to run it as a legitimate business. So Mia is determined to help him run this catering hall as a legitimate business so he doesn't have to go back to the life. And so, and it's right, and this is true, it's, you know, across, it's based on the Flushing, it's right on the Flushing Bay, the Flushing Bay Marina, so it's kind of a lovely setting, except in the background is LaGuardia Airport, the runway, so you have planes coming in and out, so, you know, and the roar of engines, so, but it's so much fun to write. Yeah, it really is, and, you know, it's very, very, a lot of the characters are inspired by my real life. And I'm writing the second book. I just finished a draft of the second book where the B story is literally, it's something that it's inspired by something my mother told me about my grandmother. And then I took it and turned it into a story.
And how is writing a series set in a very real New York? How is that different than writing a series set in a fictional town?
I'll tell you, it's interesting. My first, when I started out writing plays, and my first agent, my playwriting agent, said, you have two voices. You have a theater voice and a TV voice. And, you know, which very much proved to be true. And I think it's really kind of showing itself in the series, where I think Cajun Country Mysteries is more of my theater voice, and the Catering Hall Mysteries are more of my TV voice, in the sense that, with the Cajun Country Mysteries, to me, part of the pleasure and what drew me to writing it was describing the settings, you know, and the beauty of it, and waxing poetic almost with the prose of all that. And that's, you know, less in the Catering Hall Mysteries. I'll give you an example. I was trying to do a little of that, and I still describe what it's like, but I describe the charming, you know, the charming street, and my agent was like, I lived in Astoria. There's nothing really charming about it. So I cut out the word charming and wrote more to the real of it, which is it's like a New York neighborhood. And I find myself writing harder jokes. You know, it's a little more, the dialogue is a little more quippy, although there's that in Cajun Country Mystery, but I think it's definitely more of, you know, the TV voice. I mean, honestly, you could probably turn the book into a teleplay pretty easily, which I like to think is also true of the Cajun Country Mysteries, but the dialogue is, you know, it's a little different. And people in New York speak differently than people in Louisiana.
Yes.
They have to. Otherwise, you're not writing true to the region.
And do you ever worry about anyone from your real life in New York wanting, you know, coming up to you and say, hey, is that me you put in that book?
You know what? That's already happened to me, because one of the plays I wrote was inspired by my cousin's giant weddings. And I wrote a play called So When You Get Married, the Quando Si Sposa Fund. And it was inspired by when I had to ask my nonna put aside money for each of our, like $800 for each of our dowries when we got married. And I needed to ask my mother, nonna, for that money so I could use it as key money to get an apartment in New York. And so, you know, when you have an Italian grandmother whose oldest granddaughter is asking her for her dowry money so she can get an apartment, it inspires a play. And I said it in the bathroom of my cousin's insane wedding, where literally at one point they played the theme of Rocky and announced, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Caesar salad. And a half dozen waiters came out juggling pepper mills. All, which is true. Everything that happens in that play happened at this wedding. There were fireworks at the end. And someone asked my Uncle Henry, I remember saying, what's going to happen next? He said, they're going to shoot the bride out of the cannon. So that went into the play. So we did a reading. There was a reading of the play before it was published at a theater in New York, and friends of my mother came. And they were very gaffone, as you say in Italian, which is kind of like, you know, a little low class. And so at the Q&A after the play, one of the guys goes, he says, there were the comments, and the guy went, that's not how Betty talks. The mother, that doesn't sound at all like Betty. That's not how she talks. So I think with the book, I don't know how many of my family members will read it. But I think the ones who are of my generation, you know, will get a huge kick out of it. One of my cousins was at my New York appearance, and she was laughing, just, you know, she could totally relate when we were talking about it. I did a signing in New York, and it was a Q&A with Kelly Garrett, God bless her. And so I had family members there from my Jewish and my Italian side. And my cousin Marie was, you know, really laughing when we were talking about this series.
And speaking of both series, for the covers for a minute, I noticed that Cake and Country Mysteries feature an adorable hound dog on the cover. And
yes.
Body has a cat on the cover. Are those
yes.
based on real animals?
Yes. The Basset hound on the cover of my books was our late lamented rescue Basset, Lucy, who we loved to death. We rescued her when she was 4 or 5, and she was a very skittish, kind of neurotic, quiet, sweet girl. And we had her, she was almost 16 when she passed. But all my dogs, I've written all my dogs into the Cajun Country series. There's a dog named King Cake, and that's inspired by Wiley, because I realized Wiley was written into a book that didn't sell, so I had to find a way from him. And then there's a dog named Jolie, pretty, who was inspired by our dog Pogo, who's a boy. Ironically, Lucy was a girl, but is a boy, the Basset Hound. And then the other dogs are, I can't remember what King Cake is, but Pogo is inspired a girl dog. Don't ask me why. And the cat on the cover doesn't look anything like the real cat that inspired the cat in my series. My daughter's had a wonderful music teacher in elementary school named Mrs. Tuio, and she had the most beautiful cat. This cat was this orange color that it was just this golden orange, red orange, and she said it was an Abyssinian. And so in the book, the cat is inspired by Sphinxie, her now, I'm sorry, sadly departed cat. But on the cover, it ended up a different color. So I guess the color corresponds better with the other colors on the book cover.
And how much?
And in the Catering Hall Mysteries, there's also a bird, a parakeet, that inspired by two parakeets. My Cici Rose, my aunt, had a parakeet named Tweety Bird, and I love that bird. And somewhere in my files is a picture of the bird sitting on top of their Virgin Mary statue's head, which I just love. And then my friend Kelly, another different Kelly, a neighbor, has a parakeet named Pizzazz. So I thought that was such a great name that I kept the name for my protagonist parakeet. And her grandmother has a dog, so I'm covered on all bets. All that's missing is lizards and, I don't know, something else, reptiles.
Let's see what pet another friend or relative comes up with.
Yes, exactly.
Now, Fatal Cajun Festival is already available, so when does Here Comes the Body come out?
It's available for pre-order, and then it officially, they call it a March release, but it will deliver on February 25th of next year. So it's actually not that far away, but it is available for pre-sale.
And where can readers find your books?
They can find them at their local brick and mortar, hopefully. If not, their brick and mortar can order it. And they're also available online. They're available... some of the books, some of the Cajun Country Mysteries are available in trade paper and hardcover and Kindle. They're all available in hardcover and Kindle. Some are available, and I think up and through Mardi Gras Murder, available on Audible. Although the Mardi Gras Murder, I don't think is out yet on Audible. Unfortunately, Mardi Gras Murder and Fatal Cajun Festival at this point are not available in a paperback edition. But the prices of the hardcovers go up and down, and they make great gifts. They're wonderful. The holidays are coming.
Yes, they are.
So you can find them online at, you know, Books A Million, at Barnes & Noble, and of course Amazon.
And where can readers find more of you?
They can find me at ellenbyron.com, Ellen Byron Author on Facebook. I'm on Twitter as Ellen Byron LA, and I am on Instagram as Cajun Country's Mysteries, because my daughter was like, I don't want my friends looking you up and following you and then making fun of you. So I'm not on there as Ellen Byron. But, and Maria DiRico has her own Facebook page. I think I set her up on Twitter too. I can't remember now. Not on Twitter. I think I set her up on Instagram. I probably won't on Twitter, because I don't really feel that's where, you know, I don't think a lot of cozy readers really are Twitter followers, but they do like Facebook and I think also Instagram.
And do you have any signings coming up in November, December?
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm going to be at Mysterious Galaxy in San Diego on October 27th. And then I'm going to, I get to go to New Orleans. And I will be at Tulane Bookstore on November 1st at 1 p.m. Then I will be at the Louisiana Book Festival, which is in Baton Rouge, which is just one of my favorite things in the world to do. And I'm on a panel at 2:15 that I'm on and moderating, and then a signing at 3:15. And then I'm at the Hubble Library on Algiers Point on Tuesday night at 6:30, November 5th. And then I am at, we're driving to Houston, and I'll be at Murder by the Book on November 6th at 6:30 in Houston, 6:30 p.m. And then, I'll be at the Cozy Con. I'm also at Ladies of Intrigue, and that's November 9th, I believe, on that Sun. Wait, when is it? The Sunday, whenever in November. Hold on. November 10th. And then I'm at November 16th. I'm in Redondo Beach at Cozy Con, which is going to be a lot of fun, which is the Kensington Mini Con.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me in the Cozy Corner today, Ellen.
Thank you so much for having me. It's fantastic.
And my guest today has been Ellen Byron, author of the Cajun Country Mysteries, who writes the new Catering Hall Mysteries as Maria DiRico. This has been Alexia Gordon, author of the Gethsemane Brown Mysteries. Thank you, listeners, for joining us in the Cozy Corner, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Until next time, goodbye.